Welcome to What the Bible Says, a Lugnuts Podcast Group production.
Well, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, guten Morgen, guten Tag, and guten Abend.
Jawohl.
Sauerkraut.
Nuremberg.
Oh, Nuremberg. There you go. So we are on.
Sorry.
It's all good.
Sorry.
It doesn't take much. It does not take much.
You can tell it doesn't take much to entertain us at all.
No, it does not.
If you can make through the first 2 minutes of the mindless chatter, we actually do give something that's, I think, relative information.
Right.
Just to put your boots on, just kind of wade through through the slop here of the first 2 minutes.
Pull the bar like 30 seconds ahead. Right.
Oh, there we are.
So if you haven't listened to us once before...
Where have you been?
Where have you been? Yeah.
You have a lot of catching up to do.
Exactly. You are 21 chapters behind. But it's okay. It's okay. We are on chapter 22 of Looking Up from the Stubborn Darkness. It's from Edward T. Welch. And we're just going through here chapter by chapter. And yeah, we are now on chapter 22 entitled Family for Families and Friends. I actually have enough to kind of lead this one.
I think we're going to punt this one back to you. I've been in the lead dog here the last couple chapters here we've been having medical treatments, and then I also talked about the topic of death, and so a little more pastoral and counseling in nature, and so Kenny, I'm going to punt this one back to you and lead us in families and friends today.
Mm-hmm. So to start off, I just had that bottom paragraph there after the little subtopic, if you are depressed. And, you know, that first sentence, depression can be hard on relationships. And it's true. I mean, if you're depressed, it has a strain on any relationship you have, whether that be a marriage, friendships, whatever. It's gonna be hard to maintain that relationship, however that looks like.
Well, it goes on and says, if you're depressed, you need relationships, but you isolate yourself.
Exactly.
That's like you need people, and you recognize you need people, but yet you have a tendency to distance yourself from people, which is the very opposite of what you need to do.
Yeah.
Yep. And said, you want help, but you reject most counsel.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was me. And especially that next sentence there too. You get encouraging words from others, but you don't believe them. I have to sneeze.
Okay. Go right ahead.
Or not. Okay. Now that I said I have to sneeze, it's going to wait.
Okay, until all of a sudden,
exactly,
just blow snot all across you. Just give me a heads up so I'll duck.
Duck. Okay, now that's passed.
Okay.
I got encouraging words from friends saying, "Hey, you can."
Sorry,
it's all good.
Time for carrot juice.
Gotcha. So I got encouraging words from others during my tout with depression. And it was nice to hear those words, but they almost went in one ear and out the other because I didn't believe them. I also didn't want to hear it either. Although I wanted to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
It was like that double-edged sword. And that was tough to go through.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that last sentence says, you believe you are worthless and you seem bent on proving it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, kind of that self-imposed pity party that you have going on for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't it doesn't work. And then moving on to the next page on 198, the third, technically the fourth paragraph down, starting with, does it make you feel hopeless or helpless? Basically talking about how depressed people enact a whole wide assortment of inappropriate verbal and nonverbal behaviors and all that stuff, and responding to all that stuff. And then that next sentence there too, do you feel like other people simply don't understand depression? Because I thought that a lot too, that people really don't understand depression that well. Because like if you can't help me, then what are we doing here?
Right. Yeah. What value are you?
Right. So, yeah, that was the hard part. And then that next paragraph there, that first sentence, resist depression on this point, which was hard. Don't let it excuse you from relationships and love. You will just deepen your despair.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I took that sentence there with more value when I read this the first two times, because I did not value relationships and I made it an excuse and it deepened my despair. So, yes.
So what was the reason for your excuses? What was the reason you distanced yourself from other people, even though you were surrounded by people who wanted to help you? Any idea what the thought process going on was? I realize that's been several years ago, so it may not be a kind of an unfair question right off the bat.
I think it had to deal with more of just not wanting to change. Not knowing how I would be quote a normal person without any problems per se.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's our old I'm very familiar with the uncomfortableness. I know how to manage that. The change would require me to trust God. I don't know what the change looks like. So even though I don't like what I'm in, I at least know how to manage it.
Yeah.
I'm in control. I think that's what you said.
Yeah.
You know? And that goes to any kind of, you know, destructive, poor behavior that people have, you know, whether it's addiction, whether it's abuse, whether it's who knows, whatever, that you stay in that, even though you know it's bad.
Yeah.
You at least know how to manage it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. That makes, yeah. It makes sense. It's not a good reason, obviously.
No, it's a terrible reason.
But you know, it just becomes a trust issue is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trusting in me because I can somehow, even though I know what I'm going through is hurtful, I can at least manage the outcome and the pain a little bit as opposed to trusting God and saying, okay, Lord, I'll trust you for whatever this looks like. So, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it also didn't help that there were, during that time too, was a big time for me dealing with trust issues with people. People coming and going, and it's like,
sure,
okay, you know, I can ask you for help, and you'll be like, yeah, I can help you out. But, you know, it's like 2 weeks in, you're probably just going to say, you know what, hey, you're on your own, or just get up and leave and go somewhere else. So why even waste my time saying, hey, can you help me, when I can just deal with it myself?
Sure.
Not do anything at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll be fine. I can get through it. Which was a lie.
Yeah. You know, it makes sense. I understand.
Mm-hmm. So I will ask if you had anything on 199.
199, well, just the top of 199, you know, it's just talking about plan to love, mm-hmm. you know, and I think the key there is plan. It has to be, you know, there has to be, and that's the hard part because you're not thinking straight to begin with. So to ask somebody who's not thinking straight to plan, it's almost an oxymoron.
Mm-hmm.
But, and this is where, you know, it just gives you, I think those five bullet points of just how to respond to other people, just simply thank people, greet them, pray for them, listen to them, touch them. You know, those five just very simple yet profound ways that you could love another individual.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like the very last sentence then of third paragraph says it may be the first time in your life that you did something simply because of Jesus.
Mm.
And just really, I think that's key because up to this point, you know, the depression, and especially if you're beginning to isolate yourself, is just becoming very self-absorbing.
Yeah.
And it's just this monster you're feeding as far as you. And I want to thank people, greet them, pray for them, listen to them, touch them, not because I'm going to get better in my depression, but my motive is just because I love Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, we seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness, and then all these things will be added to us as well. That's where we put the Lord first and our own needs second. But again, that's really, really hard if you're, you know, depending upon where you're at in the whole downward spiral of depression.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're listening to this too, and you're like, well, I don't have depression. Well, you probably know someone who does.
Mm-hmm.
And this chapter is really dedicated more for people that don't
right.
have depression, that know someone who does, or maybe will know somebody that does have depression. And this is pretty much catered towards how you can start to help and then also help a person in depression. So those bullet points, yeah, if you have depression, you can do those. But really, I think those bullet points are more catered for somebody who doesn't have depression. And that's ways to get your mind going on how you can approach somebody with depression. Mm-hmm. You know, thank them, you know, greet them, obviously. Pray for them. Pray for everyone, obviously. But pray for them, you know, listen to them and touch them. That way, you know, they know that you care. That way they don't think that you're just the same old person who's just going to come around and then either go away or just not help them out. So.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. That's all I had on 199. Well, you mean you get into the next little section there as far as
yeah.
if you're a family or friend, but
yeah,
up to that point.
So yeah, I didn't have anything until 200.
Well, I guess the very last sentence, the very last paragraph then was, sometimes you will grow weary in loving.
Mm.
I guess that, you know, at some point in time, because this is the very typical, the relationship is just running one way.
Yeah.
It's all give, you know, and they're doing all the take. And it's not going any, and that's where you have to be very careful in that type of relationship. Is that you understand that it's going to flow basically one direction.
Yeah.
From you to that other person. And many times that person will receive whatever counsel, direction, thankful, greet, and pray, whatever, and they're not even grateful at all.
Right.
And you just like to go, what the heck, you know?
Right.
A simple thanks would have been nice.
Yeah. Whatever.
Well, then you just have to check your motives and say, okay, well, why am I doing
mm-hmm.
this as well? And this may be for you as the caregiver, it may be the first time in your life you did something simply because of Jesus. Mm-hmm. You're loving that depressed person, not because you want to hear anything back from them. You're loving that depressed person, not because you think they're going to change. You're loving it because our goal today is to please Christ in everything that we do.
Mm-hmm.
So but then also know your love makes a difference.
Yes.
Whether you understand it or not, your love is making a difference.
Yes. Yes. And from a former depressed person, just knowing that I had people around me that I could go to meant a lot. That way, you know, even though I didn't want to change, and it took me a while to want change too, just knowing that I had people around me, one, that I could trust, and two, would be there, meant a lot. Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking, yeah, you know, I know someone who's depressed, well, let them know that you actually care about them, because even though it's not probably going to show up right away, you'll be surprised about how much they're probably going to start opening up to mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
So on 200, the only thing I had was right before the next little subtopic, but depressed people, like all of us, are aware of kindness, kindness and love that is willing to sacrifice. Love always meets its mark. As a result, depressed people who do best are cushioned by persevering love. And that's basically what I was just talking about right there before I read that. You know, just be there for that depressed person because they're aware of kindness and love. Mm-hmm. They're not going to reciprocate it to you, most likely.
Right.
Most likely. They probably could, but it's, are they?
Right. Well, that just leads into that next section then on your discouragement, talking about the person who's trying to minister to, and we've kind of already skipped ahead to that, is that most depressed people in their apparent lack of passion or enthusiasm for anything. And at the very last paragraph there, it says, after initial sprint of love, they give up because the relationship becomes very one-sided.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems like it's flowing in one direction. And then on the next page on 201, that first paragraph says, the problem is not that they dislike you, it's more that they simply don't feel, or what they feel is different levels of pain. Relentless pain expels all their passions. You know, sometimes, you know, this again is hard to do, especially if the person you're dealing with lashes out at you for whatever reason, is you have to say, listen, I'm just a lightning rod because I just happen to be there.
Right.
You know, this is not personal, even though it may be said in a personal way. The things that are being said, don't take them personally, because that person is just kind of lashing out at you, happen just to be in the way.
Right.
The lightning rod. That's what I said. Yeah. You're the lightning rod.
Yeah.
And so that's where I think this is talking about, if you're and this is where, you know, if you're going to minister to someone, whether it's a person in depression or whatever, you know, season of life they may be going through, you've got to be in it for the long haul.
Yeah.
You know, because of the world we live in today and the quick fix of everything, you know, we can have a pretty short-term mentality of like, I'll give you 4 weeks, maybe, you know,
right,
6 at the most. Better have this all figured out. And yeah, a lot can happen in 4 to 6 weeks. But you know, the reality is, for many people, didn't get into this overnight. Probably not going to go away overnight.
Right.
You can start moving in the right direction, but it's going to take a lot more love and encouragement and counsel than just, you know, the 4 to 6 weeks, maybe, and pronounce you. You know, because then you just begin to wonder, when people have a relapse, what happened. And
right.
That is, maybe we backed off of the relationship, didn't continue what we needed to do too soon. Or that goes the other way too. The person might say, oh, I'm doing okay. I don't need to say anymore. I don't need counseling anymore. You might go, don't know.
Right.
Don't know. You know, that's a case by case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's I think this is where we're talking about here in this situation. It's kind of hard because it just seems like the more you give, the more they take.
Yeah.
And after a while, you can have a pretty negative attitude
right.
towards the person
right
that you're that you're trying to minister to.
And then this is something that we've been talking about since chapter one. And it's the last real paragraph on 201, the last sentence there of that paragraph. When you offer hope, it must be because you have found hope.
Right.
So, and that's something that we've said here. It's like, if you don't have any hope, if you're depressed and you don't have any hope, or you just don't have any hope in general, lean on ours.
Right.
And then, you know, and then you can find yours and then keep passing it on, man. Just don't, and you can hoard it for yourself, but you know, it's also better to share it with other people.
Right.
That way they can experience hope too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another key too, is to have hope. Then on 202, to help a depressed person, you don't need expert knowledge.
Yeah.
It's pretty cut and dry what they need.
Right.
You know, they need someone to be there for them. I mean, that's not hard. They need someone to talk to. That's not hard either.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you don't even need to say a word. You just need to be the lightning rod.
Right.
If they need to vent, you don't need to say anything.
Sure.
Maybe they don't need help either on that day. They just need to get it all out.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, and unfortunately, yeah, you're the lightning rod, but hey, you got to do what you got to do sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess you just go back to that list of, you know, thank them, greet them, pray for them, listen to them, touch them, and just, mm-hmm. you know, be there for them. You know, the whole ministry of compassion and kindness and encouragement and hope isn't dependent upon some deep level of thinking and understanding. Now, having said that, there probably will come a point where you have to do the put off, put on, and say, okay,
yeah,
what's the destructive behavior and what does the put on look like? And that's where you possibly need to enlist the help of a counselor, a pastor. You know, I had a lady the other day that said to me, you know, she was talking with an individual and she says, I know how to listen. I know how to listen well. I know how to process what's going on. I don't know what to say to help that person. And I just happened to be walking by at the time and stepped in and said, okay, this is what I think we need to do here.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, she thanked me for that because she said, had you not been coming by at that time, I'd have been stuck on
mm-hmm.
what do I do? So there is a level of saying, you know, you don't need to be an expert, but at some point in time, don't be afraid to also to reach out for some help.
Yeah.
And just say to somebody else, listen, I'm not quite sure
mm-hmm.
what I got going on here.
Yeah. So then that goes into the next little subtopic there of what is the most important. Without passion or keen spiritual clarity, those who are depressed find it nearly impossible to maintain a vision for things that are most important. There's nothing emerging from their haze of despair to capture their attention. And that's true too. I mean, nothing was grabbing my attention during my battle with depression. I mean, obviously there were things that would grab my attention, but not in this context here of anything offered by anybody or anything that was like really grabbing my attention.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Then on 203, what depressed people need, what we all need, are daily reminders of spiritual reality.
Right.
And that was so true. I needed that every single day. But
well, it's easy to get, they say, don't get derailed. It's easy to get derailed.
Yeah.
It's easy to get down rabbit trails, down off other things. And
mm-hmm.
not that those aren't need to be explored or whatever, but you go, the main thing is to keep the main thing.
The main thing.
The main thing.
Exactly.
Right. And that's where you have to go back and bring that person back to the reality, whatever that spiritual reality might be. I like what they say, you apply old truths to the present situations, mm-hmm. You know, and that's where sometimes people say, you just sound like a broken record. Well, the joke is about the new pastor that came to the church and he preached a message and everybody liked it. And I'm going to give you a really short version of this. And he comes back the second week and he preaches the same sermon and everybody's kind of like, well, okay, maybe he's new, whatever. Comes back the third week, preaches the same sermon again. After the service, the deacons haul him in and say, Pastor, we really like this sermon. This third week in a row, you've preached it. Do you have something new for us? And he said, yeah, when you do something about the one I preached, then I'll move on to another one. That's okay. Kind of what this is all about.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You take old truths to situations and say, yeah, we're going to keep coming back to whatever your spirituality is that you need to deal with, because it's easy to have a smorgasbord of just different things that are
mm-hmm.
potential problems, but they all are rooted in the fact of you not, you know, dealing with whatever heart issue is that we need to do here. And so mm-hmm. Instead of every day coming off, you know, on some new tangent,
mm-hmm.
you go back to and say, yeah, you get a new sermon when you do something about the one I'm preaching right now.
Yeah. 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 And that was going to be the next thing I talked about. So,
yeah. Sorry.
No.
Stole your thunder.
No,
way to go,
no,
Steve.
No, it's good. No, I don't mind it at all. And then that leads into the next little subtopic there, work together. And the last few paragraphs of that second paragraph there, you can read to, pray for, exhort, and express love in many ways to depressed people, but you can't drag them to uh-huh. your goals. Your destination must be a shared goal. And then if you're asking yourself, what is that goal?
What is that?
The next sentence there, the first sentence there, the end goal is Christ.
Yeah.
That's the goal. I mean, like that's the only goal for everybody. Right. So yeah. And then, yeah, but a shared goal, you just can't go, hey, I want to get you to the point where I am now, and whether you like it or not, this is what we're going to do.
Right.
They're just going to tone you out. So you've got to bounce ideas off of mm-hmm. each other and say, hey, what are you looking for out of this, and how can I get you there?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything on 204?
204, I'm a structure guy, and so on that top of that page, it says the principle is this: the more painful and disabling depression, the more important it is for counselors and friends to provide structure. And this just gets into some of the, I mean, there is a spiritual reality that we need to deal with, and it is Christ, but also, you have these six bullet points, which just brings some structure, because, you know, a lot of times that's what has happened is, people just lay around, you know, they're just not doing anything at all.
Right.
And just, and so you say, go to bed, eat at appointed times, exercise, have a schedule, you know, write down one thing you agree to work on every day, follow through, you know, and then I let your yes be your yes. You know, I think those are all,
mm-hmm.
And I guess the next paragraph says this structure is not simply imposed on an unwilling victim. It is a partnership among brothers and sisters and Christ.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, the whole point is here is at some point in time, you have to have some buy-in by the person who is, you know, battling depression. Because mm-hmm. if you don't have any buy-in, then at some point in time, you lovingly have to say, I don't know what I can do to help you.
Right.
I'm not going to spend my time, you know, not that I'm wasting my time, but it's not a wise stewardship of my time
right.
to spend with someone who's not interested in at least moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So here's, and what I like about this is a very measured way to say, how serious are you in the process of really trying to, I really want to get out of this. Well, okay. Here's six bullet points.
Yeah.
Let's see how you do.
Yeah.
Check these off the box and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I guess that's what they're talking about here is just good accountability.
Yeah.
Which is sometimes what you lack, because you think this is where you're trying to help that depressed person by making them accountable, and you think maybe that's going to make them more agitated or irritated, and it might initially, but you're not helping them by just letting them live a unstructured whatever. And I'm just going to do whatever I feel like today. Well, you're going to sit around and eat bonbons and play video games or sleep in until, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's just not helping you.
No.
At all.
No. So then on 205, I like that first real paragraph there. Starting with likewise, mm-hmm. when depressed people interject their skewed and self-defeating interpretations of life, you can't sit idly by. You need to challenge and interrupt their inaccurate interpretation because it is wrong and it leads to deeper despair.
Right.
Ain't that the truth?
Right. Well, I think, because the last sentence is the reason that sometimes we don't do that. As depressed people are often handled very gingerly, you feel as if you're carrying a torch around a bomb with a short fuse. And that's why I'm going to make this even worse. And when you have somebody who has a skewed, self-defeating interpretation of life,
mm-hmm.
you just can't sit by and let them say that.
Right.
Or what you might do is if they say something like that, this is what I found to do when people make those kinds of statements. They say, man, I'm just such a really rotten, terrible person. I go, okay, yeah, I see that. Huh? Yeah, I see that. And because that's not what they're looking for. They're looking for you to say, oh, you're not that bad.
Right.
You're okay. You're such a swell guy. You know, whatever. They're looking for you to somehow say, I'm not that bad a person. And when you say, man, my life's pretty messed up. You go, yeah, I'd agree. I mean, not what they wanted to hear, but that's the whole idea. And that's the way you can approach that, but not just say, yeah, you're messed up. But
right.
Here's some things that we can do
yeah.
to help you. You know, you need to acknowledge that. That's part of just the whole cycle of how you get out of this is you have to assume some responsibility for where you're at and what's mm-hmm. going on in your life. And maybe that is just lovingly to say to the person, yeah. You gotta be careful what you say. Yeah, you're pretty jacked up right now.
right.
Not in a really good place.
Right. And we're not saying to go find a depressed person and be like, hey, you're jacked up, and then walk away.
Right.
That's not what we're saying either. So,
yeah, one of my favorite proverbs is Proverbs 27:6. It says, wounds from a friend can be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, enemy multiplies kisses. What do you want me to kiss up? Tell you what you want to hear? That's your enemy.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what you really need to hear, and it's going to be some tough love, and it might sting a little bit. I'll try to word it in such a way that it takes as much sting out as possible.
Right.
But probably what I'm going to say is probably going to have a little edge to it, so put your big boy pants on,
mm-hmm.
and this is what you need to hear.
Yeah.
And that's what it says here. It can be easily understood as an expression of love. Mm-hmm. Wounds from a friend can be trusted. So if you're out there and you have a person, and again, each situation is different. I might just say you just come in here and say, all right, there's a new sheriff in town. You are going to start, you know, whatever. But you can't coddle
yes.
people either.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I don't think depressed people want to be coddled.
No, I think depressed people are looking for structure. They're looking for a way out. And you coddling them is just going to make things worse. Mm-hmm. Because depressed people don't want to be depressed forever.
Right.
Now, there might be those people out there to be like, hey, I don't mind it. I've learned how to deal with it. Well, okay, good for you. But, you know, the normal person would be, you know, I'm depressed. How do I get out of it?
Right.
And so they're looking for that way out. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would agree.
So now we get to the response on page 206. In that first paragraph, there is more to persevering than you thought. It is not simply a word that appears briefly in Scripture. It is powerful. It is a powerful, deeply spiritual response to struggles that don't quickly disappear. When we persevere with one another, we are imitating one of the glorious facets of the character of God.
Ooh, dog. Woo. Yeah, aren't you glad that Jesus didn't give up on you?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Whew.
Yes, siree.
And then that next little paragraph there too. It is here in persevering with someone who struggles with depression where you have the advantage over the experts. Experts consult, then move on. Friends and family, keep at it.
Yep.
And that's all I got on that chapter.
I was going to say that pretty much that sums it up.
Yeah.
It's hard, you know, because sometimes you just like feel like punting people to the curb, you know, but it's like, when does that happen? You know, that's that whole Jesus leaves the 99 and goes out after the stray and brings him back. And just a really just a good chapter on, a practical chapter on friends and family and how do we minister and hope. And if you're the depressed person, you know, not taking it personally that people love you. As a matter of fact, you know, the fact that they're willing to make that effort to be with you gives you, the time as a depressed person you need to be concerned is not when people are getting after you. It's when they stop coming around.
Right.
That's when you go, okay, they gave up on me. Mm-hmm. That's the time you need to be. So if you got people that are hounding you right now, thank the Lord.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That's good. You know, if people who loved you have like kind of started to kind of distance themselves, it's not that they don't love you anymore, not that they're praying for you, but at some point in time, it's like, even as believers, I don't call how close the friendship is.
Yeah.
I'm not banging my head against this wall anymore. It's,
right.
It hurts.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to have to move on.
Yeah. So.
Anyway, good chapter.
Yeah.
It's good discussion.
It's a great chapter. So next week or whenever we record next.
When we meet again.
We'll be on chapter 23, and that is entitled, What Has Helped? So stay tuned for that. But for today, Kenny Kramer for Steve and Steve Cox here saying, don't forget, Jesus loves you and
so do we.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast today. If you did, visit our website for more information and shows at thelugnutspodcastgroup.com. Like us on Facebook and Instagram, and we'll see you next week.